We're doing Pirkei Avot with Rabbeinu Yonah. We were up to the seventh Mishnah in the second chapter. Hillel would tell us, he who has much flesh will become much vermin. He who has much assets will have much to worry about. He who has much women will have much need for aphrodisiacs. He who has much maids will have much promiscuity. He who has much servants will have much theft. So in all of these, we said the stress is the much. When there's too much. There's nothing wrong with any of these. A person has to eat. A person has to have a wife. He has to have assets. The point is that people pursue these to the excess, assuming that that will provide them with happiness. And Hillel comes to point out the opposite, the inverse. Then Hillel went on to show a correspondence. If much flesh produces much vermin, so then much Torah produces much life. Marbe Torah, marbe chayim. Marbe chokhmah, marbe yeshiva. If a person has much wisdom, he will have much yeshiva. What does yeshiva mean? That's a good question. We all pursue a yeshiva. So let's see Rabbeinu Yonah. Marbe chokhmah, marbe yeshiva. When one has much wisdom, he will have much yeshiva, which literally means to sit down, to settle down. Says Rabbeinu Yonah, רצה לומר חוכמת הסברה והפלפול, שעל ידי זה הוא מרבה ישיבה, כי יבואו התלמידים לשמוע דברים חדשים, להתחדד עמו, ללמוד עניין הסברה המתחדשת כחוכמה בפני עצמה. When a person has much wisdom, so then he will have much people coming around him to focus, to learn from his wisdom. Marbe chokhmah. If he has much wisdom, marbe yeshiva. Rabbeinu Yonah understands that to mean like we use the term yeshiva today. A person will have much people sitting around him, focused to learn, to absorb the insights he has. Because there's wisdom, there's chokhmah, and then there's the product of wisdom, which is the capacity to synthesize, to work out the details, the logic behind the laws of what we're learning. And what are we doing in Gemara? Half the time we're trying to figure out what the reasoning behind the halacha is. So that's where the wisdom should lead a person, to be able to deduce beyond the written word. So if a person has attained much wisdom, then the assumption is there will be many people who want to come learn from him to attain that wisdom, to access that wisdom. ורצה לומר שנותנים לו שכר כנגד כולן, כי הוא הגורם. The Mishnah that indicates that because he worked hard for wisdom, there will be a lot of people around him to hear his teaching, so the Mishnah is indicating that he will get wages for it, because it's all given back to him. It's considered his. He caused that to happen. And this part of the Mishnah corresponds to what we read, that if one has many maids, there will be a lot of promiscuity. The Mishnah is indicating that sometimes there can be a causality, there can be a cause and effect, and the effect is attributed to the cause. In other words, if we do something and that causes an outcome, we have a ripple effect, so then we are held accountable for that ripple effect as well. And so the Mishnah is saying, when a person has a lot of maids, so he can say, what does it have to do with me that there's a ripple effect, a lot of promiscuity because there are a lot of women going around his house? That's why the Mishnah says, no, a person is held accountable. When he sets up the stage, either for the Malbe Shfachot Malbe Zima, or the inverse, Malbe Chokhmah Malbe Yeshiva, when a person sets up the situation so that a lot of people can learn, can benefit from the wisdom that he has actually worked hard to attain, so the Mishnah is telling us he is given the credit in both ways, for the good or for the better. Malbe Itza Malbe Tvuna. He who has much insight, he will have much understanding. Malbe Itza, when he has a lot of thoughts, advice, insight, so that brings him to understanding. Marbe tzedakah, marbe shalom. When one gives much charity, he increases the peace in the world. Explains Rabbeinu Yonah, Hanoten tzedakah yedei sheneinim mamono. When one gives charity, and then people benefit from his wealth. Ohavin oto. So then people like him. So then he creates positive energy, creates a positive relationship. That people out there are walking around feeling good about this person. Umarbe shalom ba'olam. And then he promotes goodwill, peace in the world. And the next point, and this is one that people don't like to hear, but it's so important. When one advises others to give charity, then in heaven it's considered as though he did that charity. Ordinarily, we would rather give our own donation than talk to someone else about giving money. We're very uncomfortable asking for money. And even though it can be a worthwhile cause, the nature of man is that man does not like to ask for money. And financial advisors say that that's why people don't move on in the world of finance. Because people are embarrassed to ask even for a raise, or when they're negotiating in a job interview. So people are very often hindered from asking what they're really worth. And so very often people's salaries are limited because they're not ready to ask for a raise, or even at the initiation, when they're having their initial job interview, there's a certain innate hesitation from asking for what we're worth. So certainly we have this hesitation, this shame of asking for others or asking for a charity. Chazal taught us that when a person promotes charity, when a person encourages others to give, it's considered as though he himself gave. We saw the Chafetz Chaim took it a step further. The Chafetz Chaim said, if there's a pool of money, let's say there's $1 million, and that pool of money can accomplish a certain amount of good. Now, they can only accomplish it because they have that large sum, and my part in that sum is minimal. Nonetheless, being that I play a pivotal role, I am one of 10,000 donors, and due to my donation, they were able to accomplish what they did. So then the whole accomplishment is considered like I facilitated it. The Chafetz Chaim proved it from Halacha. In the laws of Shabbos, we say if a prohibition was done, and there were two people, let's say, who carried an item from private domain to public domain, if neither one could have done it alone, then it's considered as though each one did the complete act. So the Chafetz Chaim said the same is true with regards to acts of kindness. If an act was done and it couldn't have been accomplished without you, even though there were many partners, it's as though the whole act was accomplished by each individual. So here, the Chafetz Chaim says, when one advises others to give charity, it's considered as though he did that charity. Chazal say, Gadola me'aseh yoter min ha'oseh, the Gemara says. He who causes others to do is greater than those who actually do. And we see that Rabbi Akiva, we see the sages throughout the generations, would actually invest their time and effort in going around and encouraging other people to give, encouraging other people to do, to actually create. There's the famous story of Vysotsky, right? The Vysotsky tees, that they had a whole empire in Russia, and someone convinced them to invest in Israel. And then their empire disappeared in Russia, and only thanks to their investment here in Israel, only thanks to that were they able to continue existing. So I'm sure when the person came and tried to convince them to invest in Israel, he wasn't telling them to do it for business purposes. He was encouraging them to invest in the future of the people of Israel. And then it turned back, and it was something that stood by them and saved the family later on. Yes?
So it's mitzvah to ask, maybe more so than giving. It's a good thing to ask, even more so than giving. And giving is also good. Here's a question. If you're asking a non-Jew to give, is it mitzvah that person who's a non-Jew to then give the same way, or is not the same?
It's not the same at all.
But it's of course still good, you could say. You're still
correct. It says it clearly in the Gemara, the Gemara in Tractate Rosh Hashanah.
And even more so, it's not by the same logic sense, it does not add good to the world necessarily that a non-Jew asks for money, right?
I wouldn't say that. Let's go one step at a time. There are two types of charity in the world. There's global charity, and then there's a Jewish charity. Now, it's a mitzvah for a non-Jew to give charity to either one. In his end, he's accomplished good things. On our end, we don't necessarily have a reason to go and promote it. We have an interest in the world being a better place. We want the world to continue moving forward. We want there to be peace in the world. The world, I'm not talking about Israel. And at large, we have a certain global responsibility, a certain care that the world will move forward. But you know what? There are people who go out and volunteer with orphans and their kids at home are hungry. So that's a little bit improper. A person should first take care of his own kids and then go and deal with other kids. So that's why we're at a state where our kids are hungry. There are children who are literally hungry, and then you have millions of people who are spiritually hungry. And as such, we cannot focus our efforts externally. And our first responsibility is to take care of things at home. I'll tell you a story I wrote this Shabbos, but it's a true story. In the war in Lebanon, so a friend of mine was on a tank, and they got lost in Lebanon. And they had no idea where they were. They knew they were in enemy territory, but they had no idea where they were or how to get back. North, south, east, west, they were clueless. They're looking around and they're trying to contact the base, and no one knows where they are. At that point, everyone knew that their lives were in danger. And the other soldiers in the tank turned to my friend and said, "Pray." He was wearing a yarmulke. And he turned to them and said, "I'll pray, but you should also pray." And they turned back to him and said, "We don't know how." What does that mean, we should pray? What are we supposed to do? So here their lives were on the line, and all they knew how to say was turn to the other guy and say, "Daven for us." So it's nice that they asked them to daven for them, but let's think what that means. That means that they don't begin to understand that they have a relationship with their Creator. That's the state of affairs today. Saying it's one story, but it's representative of where Am Yisrael is holding. As such, we have a responsibility to focus inward. We have a responsibility to build within. When we speak about the mitzvah to encourage others to give, so we're talking about a Jew encouraging a Jew to give. But the same logic would hold if you're encouraging a non-Jew to give, so that's also a wonderful thing. In general, we're not so keen on accepting donations from non-Jews. So that's why I'm saying we have to quantify what we're discussing. In general, we say, you know, there's a global effort and the world has to move forward. And in that, we would definitely encourage a non-Jew to give to whatever organizations there are that will help move the world forward. And again, Jews also have a global responsibility. And I think that the same would hold true, even though the Gemara doesn't say it, if one non-Jew encourages another non-Jew, so they're also doing a wonderful thing. I'm saying, so that's...
you can say that no matter what, you're doing a good thing. For.
I'm saying, yeah, these are all positive things. I'm just saying, I don't want to address it halfway. So that's why with regards to Jewish charities in general, our approach is that we should build from within. Baruch Hashem, we have enough assets, we have a responsibility to allocate them correctly.
Let me just add to this on a much, much more microscopic level, on my individual level almost, or from the personal perspective of someone else in my situation. Twice someone came up to me and asked for money because they just got married and I had no idea how to say no or to explain that I'm doing what you were telling me. So I just gave money in the end and I was just wondering if there was some...
If you can afford it, so that's a mitzvah. Why not? You help a fellow human being. Why not?
Question?
Yes.
Receive funds from people that aren't Jewish as donations?
So that's a good question that deserves a long answer.
I mean, say like there's somebody from a Reformed synagogue that, you know, they associate, they identify with Judaism.
Give me just 1 second. I'm sorry. Does everyone here want us to take 5-10 minutes to address that? Mm-hmm. Yes? Okay. So then I'm with you. Okay, we'll just finish this and we'll transfer. I'm with you, Yaakov. Yes?
Okay, so let's say there's somebody from a Reformed synagogue in the U.S. that wants to donate. They identify with Judaism. They feel that they're Jewish. Maybe they're not technically. But they want to give to a yeshiva in Israel. And give them a fund there. Would you accept it?
So I'll tell you a story. Okay? This story I heard from Rabbi Lau back when he was chief rabbi, the father, about 18 years ago. There was a guy who didn't keep Shabbos. He wasn't faithful to his wife. He didn't keep kosher. The connection between him and his Jewish roots was very frayed. And he had a son who did tshuva. Chozer b'tshuva came to Israel, started learning. And the son got married and continued learning. And his father was well-to-do. His father wanted to buy him an apartment. And his father wanted to support him. And the kid said, I don't know what to do. He comes to his Rosh Hashiva and he says, my father doesn't eat kosher. He doesn't lead a kosher lifestyle. He isn't so honest in his business dealings. And now he wants to send me from that money that, to my mind, is dirty money. Am I allowed to accept it? So the Rosh Hashiva looked at him and said, so you're telling me your father doesn't keep kosher? The guy says, right. You're telling me your father doesn't keep Shabbos? The guy says, right. You're telling me they're almost in the mitzvah in the Torah that your father keeps? And the guy says, right. That's what I'm telling you. So the Rosh Hashiva looks at him and says, and you want to take away the one mitzvah he wants to do? He wants to do one mitzvah. He wants to help you learn Torah. You want to take that from him too? So that's an important approach. Just because a person isn't 100% in other areas of their lives doesn't mean we should take away from them the opportunity to do a mitzvah. In general, when it comes to accepting donations, so there are multiple concerns. There are organizations that will give money for free at first and later on come with demands. This is true of many organizations. In general, that's why that's one reason why it would be prohibited to accept donations from a non-Jewish organization, because sometimes there are ulterior motives. In such circumstances, it's prohibited. There's no room to talk about. Then there are instances like you're describing where a person even thinks he's Jewish. He might be Jewish. We don't know exactly. He comes from a Reformed temple, etc. There's no reason we shouldn't accept a donation from him. We don't have to go researching whether he's actually Jewish or not. He identifies, he's giving it without any strings attached. He wants to do something positive in the world. Great, why not give him that opportunity? Then you have situations where you know it's coming from a non-Jewish source, and your understanding is that they aren't interested in affecting things internally, they just want to donate. That's where you enter a gray area in halacha. Ordinarily we say you should not accept it, let them donate to other causes. But there is room to discuss and room to permit when necessary. It has to be discussed with the halachic authority, and sometimes that would be permissible. That's where it enters a gray area. The problem is that sometimes the donations are of the nature we discussed initially, where people really want to impact what we're doing, but they make believe that they're giving it with innocent and no strings attached, with innocent intentions. And that's where things get sticky. That's where it's prohibited halachically, but people will come and say they're donating $30 million and they're not making any demands right now. So that's where it gets sticky, and that's one of the reasons why it's so important to ask a shayla before you move forward. Firstly, it's not clearly permitted even where there's no strings attached and no ulterior motives. It's not that it's permitted then, it's that there's room to discuss it then. And secondly, very often people are misled. People would like to believe that that's the case. We have here in Israel many times that's happened, where missionaries came to Israel and gave large donations, be it to public services, social services, and for the first years they gave millions of dollars and didn't ask for anything. And then after they were a part of the system, suddenly they asked for the list of recipients, which at first glance seems like a legitimate request. If I'm giving you millions of dollars, I'm entitled to see who you gave it to. The only problem is that after they got the list of recipients, they then followed up with their missionary activity with those recipients. So that's a tactic that's used sometimes, where an organization will try to make believe that they're giving it without strings attached, and that's one of the reasons that we have to be extra cautious. Aside from the fact that even when there are no strings attached, it's not permitted. It's a question. It's something that needs to be dealt with on a case-by-case basis. Okay?